And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 123. My name is Silas Lindenstein.
I'm Samantha Rund.
And we are your hosts for Black and a Half, Seattle's longest running comedy podcast. Probably. Yeah. We are here today. We have our special guest today is a very funny comedian. I'm not sure where to say you're out of. Do you declare yourself out of where you are now? Or do you say are you a Portland comedian?
I don't declare myself nowhere, man. Nowhere? I'm a black man in America.
The free state?
Yes. I'm nowhere. You work for the government, y'all cops. Why you need to know where I'm at?
Comedian from the Free State, Nathan Brannan, winner of Portland's Funniest Comedy Competition, Seattle International Comedy Competition, future Hall of Famer, obviously. I loved having Nathan on. I've been watching his videos on. Now, I've known him a while in comedy, admiring from afar, really. But he's been doing these gardening videos that I love. So those of you listening to the show, know that I've gotten into gardening the last couple of years. Yeah. And if you're watching the video, he's showing some right now.
These will save your life.
The greens will save your life. So I was super excited to have him on. So I was like, I want to talk gardening. And I have this dream of a black gardening special one day. I mean, me and Nathan will get together when COVID ends.
Let's do it.
And we can, yeah.
Can I bring the sweet tea?
Brothers on dirt. I don't know. Yeah.
It's going to be hot today. Make sure your greens is covered.
And today's a fun episode. We talk a little bit about the fires that we're all trapped in our homes. We talk about jumping to conclusions on headlines, whether it's for, movies or news articles, that kind of thing. It's a little discussion about that. And then we get Nathan's origin story, how he got into it, into comedy, and a little bit in gardening. And of course, how we got into a nice art discussion. Comedy art discussion, which is nice. We don't get a lot of those. Get them more of the filmmakers.
I tried to get him to tell me his Dave Chappelle secrets. So you'll see if I'm successful or not.
Yeah. Caesar, does she do it? Don't you make it? And then, of course, he answered the world famous 7 questions. Mm-hmm. Again, thank you for everybody for listening. If you enjoy the show, please go to Apple Podcast and subscribe, and leave a review for the show. It really helps us find other people, other listeners. And also, a big shout out to our Patreon members. You too can help support the show by going to patreon.com/blackandahalf. And just for just $1 a month, you can become a member of the League of Extraordinary Listeners, which helps make this show possible. Or if you want to bump that up a little, you can become an Inner Circle member like Tara Widener or Stefan Ward or Keith Nagel. And then your name may get said on the show. That's right.
That's right. It may.
All the internets. Well, once we get like 500, obviously we can't do that anymore. But
I will do a special episode where I say all of the names in different voices.
Our credits at the end.
That's right.
It's a 15-minute show and then an hour of credits.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah. So big thanks to all of you for being our Patreon supporters, or even if you're someone who just likes to share this. And of course, as always, show is brought to you by Silas Lindenstein at Skyline Properties. If you are in the Seattle area looking to buy or sell a home, please go to silasgetsreal.com and we'll set up an appointment with that guy, Silas. Okay, and then it's also brought to you by
Beyond Technique Coaching. That's right. If you're looking for a coach to help you with performance skills to improve your life in voice, body, and mind for stage, screen, or personal development, you can always reach me at beyondtechniquecoaching@gmail.com. And if you're looking for also great tips, discussions, and some of that great juicy talk about performance arts, you can tune into the Beyond Technique podcast with Samantha Rund.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then let's see. Last note, next episode is 124. That's going to be Black and a Half Reviews, where I review some of my latest films that I've caught in a series. This next one coming up is the controversial French film Cuties, new on HBO Max, Unpregnant, and then new on Netflix, a series, The Duchess. So, so listen to that. That's a teaser for the next episode that'll drop on Thursday. But otherwise, thank you again for listening, and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 123, Nathan Brandon and the World of Aquaponics.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Nathan is he was a Portland comic. I believe the best of Portland. Am I not? Is that correct? Weren't you best of Portland?
They used to say it back in the day, but these whippersnappers these days.
You look like a whippersnapper these days. What are you talking about?
And now you're shaved, so you can't see the widow's peak up here.
Are you in Walla Walla now? Is that where you're out of? Like home based in Walla Walla with all the home onions. Based. With all the onions.
You should not call them that, man. What? They are just regular white people.
Did you say Funyun?
No Funyuns. Not Funyuns.
Those like onion rings.
Samantha's chips? A Seattle comic, but she was out of LA. So I don't know that you would have crossed unless you did a festival somewhere together.
Well, after I moved from Portland, I was in Seattle more than I was Portland, but it's still been a while, you know, because society collapsed. So
yeah, it's great.
I haven't been anywhere.
Oh, society.
Samantha will appreciate. She doesn't know. I don't know if you know this, like about Nathan, since you've just met him, but I couldn't believe it when I saw a video beginning of the year in spring. I had no idea that Nathan was a farmer.
A farmer, you're right.
A
fellow farmer, I like to say.
I wear all the hats that anybody will give.
He grows so much stuff, like microgreens, and then he's growing stuff, and then he's a huge farm in the back. He's talking about, I was watching his video awestruck, because I thought I was the only Black person in Washington that loved a garden.
You just want to finish it at the only Black person in Washington. That's what you thought.
And then I saw this video. I was just scrolling through Facebook and
he's like talking about giving gardening tips. I'm like, what?
That's awesome.
This is a representation of Black people I want to see on TV.
You know, for the longest time, I only started posting about it maybe like 2 years ago. And before then, I've been doing it over a decade, and I never told anybody because I thought other comics would be like, what are you doing with plants, man?
Oh, yeah. What are you doing? Why do you have some happiness in your life?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be balanced, fool?
You must not care about comedy that much if you are willing to give life to something else. This industry is about death.
So you did this before you moved to Walla? Walla? Walla Walla?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't. Mm-hmm. How in Portland?
I started aquaponics in Portland.
That's what's crazy. When I hear like aquaponics, that's like another level.
It's basically
farming. Like, that's chemistry. That's chemistry.
No, it's not as there's two. So hydroponics is like when you take all the chemicals and mix it in with the water and all that stuff. Aquaponics, you're basically mimicking nature. Like what would happen in a stream? That's just water bending, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so, I like that.
Yeah, I used to do it back then. My first
real big project at our last place in Portland. I built, it was a storage shed, plus it had like aquaponic systems up top to collect rainwater and feed the plants on the top of the storage shed and cascade down into a tank. But we were renting and our landlord was terrible, so I ripped it apart. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So long time. That was long winded.
Well, that's okay.
We're both fascinated.
Am I too far away? Should I be close? Is this
that's the right distance.
I don't look like I look like a shaman like hit me with a curse. Like his head's so much smaller.
Wait, is that a pot leaf on your shirt?
Oh yeah. Okay.
Can we try to figure it out? Because it seems like, is it a pun? It's a chicken pie. Chicken pot pie.
There it is. Yes.
Hey, chicken pot pie.
My brain wasn't ready for that.
No, dude, I'm just really good at these, Silas. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is my birthday present.
I feel like a challenge coming on. I feel like that's got to be a segment or something where Samantha and I compete for these. What are they called?
I love it.
It's a type of puzzle. Is that a type of puzzle?
I don't know.
There's a name for it. Probably.
I call it a hieroglyph.
Hieroglyph puzzle? Okay, sure. Whatever.
Yeah. I love wearing it around just to get all the dirty stares from old white ladies.
And they get mad. And
you didn't feel like you were getting enough, but at least now you can blame it on the t-shirt.
Yeah, that's right. And then I can turn at them and be like, you can't read.
I don't know you guys how you felt about, okay, we're all trapped in fire, right? You're trapped in fire. Walla, are you guys not going outside? That's right.
I've been watching Book of Eli over and over.
I used, not to say on gardening, but I used one of your tips about, I went and watered down all my plants, which I normally wouldn't, to get all the smoke soot off or whatever. Thank you for that.
To make sure they could live still?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep getting.
Otherwise, you starve them out. They,
I was like, oh, that's fantastic.
Well, it's not usual, too. Like, we don't normally have like this.
Yeah.
It doesn't come up a lot, I guess. So, how are you feeling? I don't know. Like, I felt like last time I recorded Samantha, I don't think it was like this, was it? It wasn't? Okay. Because I don't know if I feel like I'm getting kicked when I'm down, you know, like,
yeah.
I was like, okay, I just feel like I was finally into, you know, we could play in the yard, we go on our walk, do some gardening in the morning, and then I have two little kids here, and suddenly to be told we cannot go outside. Well, I mean, not told. That's funny how they don't tell you you can't go outside.
you can do it if you want.
Nobody has a fit about it. But I can't do anything. Like, I'm just so, like, are you kidding me? I've gone outside to water in a mask. I've been a big sanding mask that I put on. I look like a stormtrooper out there. But then I go out and come right back in. But the kids haven't left. And they're like, what? My baby Finn, he's like, he keeps saying, pee-pee outside walk? Pee-pee outside walk? Because we always have him change his pee-pee. But then they go outside for a walk.
That's good. I was a little bit afraid that you were having him go outside just to assert his manhood.
Get out there!
I need him to know what territory is ours.
Exactly.
Like, don't those raccoons are not going to take over.
We garden our own food in this house. Get out there. You get no water.
What are you? Are you doing anything? Like, are you do anything different now? Like, what are you doing to deal with it? Or am I the only one going crazy right now? That's what I need to know.
I'll let our guest go first.
Oh boy, how much time you got? This was the last weekend before my kids started kindergarten, man. So it was real rough. We're just in here like, man, just looking at each other like, when's school starting? You want to just start early? We can get on the computer right now if you want. It's tough. Like you were saying, like, you know, especially with gardening and things, like you want to be out there and being taken care of stuff. It's kind of like you're watching everything kind of get sick from inside, from the window.
Yeah.
And that kind of sucks. But it is what it is. I mean, I think this far into this year, you just kind of, it feels like you're constantly running. Like, you know, those volcano movies when like people are like, no, the volcano's not going to blow. And then it blows and then they have to run and then, and the clouds behind them. That's what this whole year feels like. So like every time something comes up, like, oh, that tree's on fire. Well, just keep running. That's what it feels like.
Like, we're in
roll with it.
Like, we're like watching a disaster movie and you're like, that's not realistic. Now that wouldn't just keep happening. Like, we would, our film of our real life documentary right now would be to be considered too improbable to be written up as a film.
I don't know. You know, it seems slow. Does it seem too improbable or does it seem like exactly what happens if you're looking at it mathematically with the actions of society up until now? I mean, do you know what I mean? Because there is a point with like, why is this happening to us? Because we ourselves are not really responsible for the big things, right?
Yeah.
But it's also like, man, but I have this wild thought. Yeah. Actually, never mind. No.
No, good. Sorry.
You can't say I have a wild thought and then stop.
No.
That's just
okay. I had a wild thought. Okay. Oh boy. And I was talking to a friend of mine and she doesn't like she believes in like energy, but she doesn't believe in God or like that sort of difference in everybody has their own beliefs and whatnot. And so sometimes we like stop, you know, we stop each other to acknowledge like, oh, this is the difference. And like, this is what we agree on. This is where we don't. Okay, cool. But you know, I know for some people, they don't believe in God. Cause they're like, well then why are bad? I'm not saying this for her, but like, they're like, well then why do bad things happen to me? Or like, why is he not answering our prayers? And I just said, you know, I said, well, here's an idea. Like, what if animals can pray too? And this is the answer to their prayers because we've been killing them for forever. I'm just saying, seriously, like, what if Earth, Mother Earth, the Earth, she prays too. And she's like, you lock those bastards up. They've been killing me, putting plastic in me. They've been doing this shit. I'm just saying, like, man, it's not. Like, I don't want any of us to suffer or die, any of, you know, people, innocents too, right? But at the same time, it's like a price has got to be paid for all this bullshit that's been going on for all of these years. Like, what are we just going to get off scot-free? We know better than that.
The breaking point was when bees stopped flying. They were just like, the riots on the stuff. It's like, all right, it's over.
Man. That was my thought.
I feel like we like our generation, like when we're super old, like our kids and grandkids are just going to be giving us so much like dementia medicine and things. Like, you trying to explain what's going on right now? Like, and then like, Kanye West, he turned around and it's like, all right, here's your pills, grandpa.
I feel like that's a very hopeful thought though, because that means that things will have returned back to quote unquote normal for them to think
still get drugs.
Yeah, here, have some more CBD, Dad. Come on, Grandpa.
Kanye West, the warlock.
And then the fires on the internet that were out of control, the metaphorical ones. We're dropping a review, the film review episode this week. One of the films that I reviewed was the film Cuties, right? And so you can hear my full thoughts on that.
I have not seen it yet.
But I will. Here's what's driving me nuts, though. I think this is a perfect example of people jumping to conclusions based off of like a headline. Like, they see a headline and they think they know the whole fucking article, and they don't. And that's what this movie did. Like, everyone's making these judgments about something that they literally have no idea. Did you watch it? No, I'm not gonna. Like, well, I mean, I don't know how to argue with you. I'm not going to convince you to watch a French subtitled film that you never would have watched.
But it's hard
because you ever heard of it.
like if you watch it, that ends up in like your watch history, right? What if somebody logs into your thing? Like, okay. But here's the thing. I don't know what it's about, but I definitely saw some kids twerking on it and I was like, nope. Like it's like back in the 60s, like when they say like whites only, you'd be like, okay, I don't know what it's like in there, but I don't think
I had that initial when they put a post poster out. I watched the coming soons that are on Netflix to see what I'm gonna maybe review. They're like, keep an eye out. And they never even tell me on the coming soons. You don't know if it's a French, you don't know if it's a foreign film or a US film or what it is. But the first time I saw it, I saw a poster and my judgment on it right away was, oh, another stupid freaking reality show. I don't need to see, I'm not gonna watch that. And it wasn't until I went back again another day that I saw it said film next to it and not. And I was like, oh, is it a documentary or something? And then I played the trailer and I'm like, well, that's not friggin' what the poster looks like at all. Like, that's nowhere near. Yeah, there's. Okay, so it's a dance film about 11-year-olds. This sounds stupid. And then it was French. And then it was French. And I was like, well, maybe I'll put it on my list for if there's nothing else on that week that I'm interested in. And then when it came out, like was coming out, I heard it was a Sundance film winner and I'm like, oh, I'm excited. Oh man, I'll check that out. And that's when the internet had exploded about it because they saw the old poster, which I don't know. The conspiracy theory part of me is like, you know, Netflix pulled it down, apologized to the director, said, oh yeah, that's not what it is. Sorry that we showed it to be something like that. Nobody, this film, all you watching would never have seen or heard of this film if they hadn't put a scandalous poster up about that would get some heat for it. Most people wouldn't have watched it that are complaining about it or did watch it. And I'm like, that also kind of makes the point the movie does. Like, they did use the girl. The only time they were actually exploited was for that poster that ended up getting everyone to watch it, which is kind of the point of the whole film. And I'm like, that was either a huge mistake by Netflix or it was genius. If it was intentional, they're like, you know what we should do? And it's like the point of the film. We should actually do this. But maybe it went a bit bigger than they expected. We're like, oh, no, we didn't try it. No. Yeah, that was an accident. Sorry. I'm like, my conspiracy part thinks maybe they did it to make a point and they got all the views that they possibly could have wanted.
That's like my shirt. That's why I wear this shirt, actually, the more I think about it.
But I do talk about the film more, but I'm like, but how do you deal?
Well, I'm glad you said that because, like, I try not to be one of those like, did you hear what happened in that headline? You know, share. But yeah, I was like, well, I don't get remote privileges that much in my house, so like, even if I
I missed that scandal. I'm just saying, Silas. It barely like I wasn't really tuned into the news this week. And if it doesn't pop up on my Facebook feed or my, you know, it's a good chance I'm not going to hear about it right now.
Okay.
So I saw like one or two people say something about it, but more like the biggest thing was the fires. Most of the news for me was lost.
Somebody, one of my Facebook, a fellow black person, did comment that he has only seen the complaints coming from white people about this movie. Now, the lead girl in it plays a immigrant from Senegal living in Paris. And on a couple of these threads that I'm on about the film, I have discussed if this was a white girl, this never would have blown up. But they suddenly, it seems like when there's a person of color who's put on the screen, whether they're a woman of color, whether they are 11 or 30, the same pose, a sexploitation or slut, right?
You know, yeah, I thought about that.
Women of color if they show their body more than.
Oh, you mean like at the Super Bowl? With Shakira and J-Lo?
Yes.
When people were losing their minds and like. Look at how the cheerleaders are all the time.
People don't notice this. Like y'all didn't notice this for 10 seasons of that disgusting pageant show or that disgusting yes. dance show. They're wearing nothing different than those girls.
I was just thinking that. I was like, hey, didn't Discovery Channel do like 8 seasons yeah. on like, let's paint this kid up?
Yeah, but then it's just wow. weird that as soon as it's a black girl in the lead there, suddenly people are flipping out. Because it's like suddenly, that. I don't know, like the sex comes to, why does the sexual part come to your mind now of it? Before it was just like, oh, they're just dancers.
Well, I'm just kind of like, I think they made like a couple bad moves. First of all, they put that Epstein documentary up before they put this one up. And I was like, that was a bad look. You got to switch them up.
Good call. Yeah.
You're getting everybody.
Oh, I mean, everybody was already thinking about that. Yeah. I mean, I see what you're saying, but again, because I am, I just looked up the poster because I didn't know what you were talking about. That's what earlier I was like trying to see. But then not having seen the movie myself, my comments are just, you know.
Well, just fun. Yeah, no, but I mean, it's.
You have opened my mind to it. I just kind of that's my thing. It's not really on my radar, but.
You can listen to the audio part of it. I'll tell you, there are parts.
It's.
There is an element that it's hard to watch, but that's the point. But it's not like disgusting. Like, it's just like, I don't want to see this, but it's the point. And it's weird. There's some films that I have a hard time recommending. I can tell you, I think this was a great film. I think it was a work of art. But the problem with art is sometimes it's not necessarily a pleasant experience and it's not necessarily a getaway. And one of the reasons I started doing film reviews was to start again watching art because I've been watching so much bubblegum kind of movies because I'm like, I need to feel good sometimes. But in doing that, I feel kind of detached from my craft that I've done. That's supposed to be more thoughtful.
Award-winning director. Stuff. Yes.
Yeah. And as I'm getting ready to film again, I need to,
that's right.
Get my chops going. And so watching, so I want to watch some more art films. And so that's why I'm reviewing. And so that's why I watch this, but otherwise it's not, I don't know how to tell someone you should watch this. Yeah. Like I went to my daughter's Instagram account, like right after this was like, what is she posting? And I'm like, what is she watching on there? How come? Hold on. She's deleted stuff on here. So I froze her Instagram account until I could talk to her. I blocked it off of her phone. I'm like, I'm going to talk to her. And so we had a conversation and that's what it made me do. And I think that's what great art does is it makes you think about it after enough to take an action.
And so are people mad because like you can't like fast forward through parts? Like it just keeps you like that Bird Box scene. No, just look, you got it. No.
they're mad at the principle of the exploitive nature of children. Now they care. I don't know. But it's hard for me to say, yeah, Nathan, watch the film. Because it's not like fun. It's interesting. It's really interesting. And I mean, that is it's a small part of it, but it is really about it. It's a coming of age story. It teaches us about how you shouldn't reminds us maybe about the influences that young people are getting now and how they use that to discover themselves. But I review it with Sherry Hardman on the show for the next episode. So there's a lot of discussion about it before I get too into it. But I guess my whole thing on this one,
check it out.
I see it a lot of people just reacting to headlines. And is that just, are you guilty of it? I mean, do you guys ever guilty of like reading the headline of something and just.
Well, I kind of am, but I always like before you really buy into something, like you got to see a lot of different outlets kind of with a similar headline. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The new thing, the ICE story. You know what I mean? That stuff, some of this stuff is so outlandish. You're like, nah. And then you got to keep scrolling and be like, New York Times. Okay. So let's start reading.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, right. Honestly, I feel like sometimes I could get completely tricked now by stuff that Trump said. Like I'm looking at like one thing today and going, he couldn't have said it, but then like, no, he could have. This is,
I didn't,
I really have no way to judge whether this is a suck me in headline. I don't know if it's clickbait or not.
Exactly. I didn't even know that he had recordings with that author. I didn't even know that it was recorded that he said that. I just saw people kept saying it and I was like, okay, add it to the list.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, here.
No, he really did. Like, oh.
I did not. Again, I think I missed this story.
You missed that story?
Which one? Is cool. Just...
Yeah, I'll just make you mad.
Which one?
Yeah. But back to the
headline.
What you were saying about headlines is, yeah, I feel like that's the job of a headline. The job of the headline is to get you to react, have an emotional response and like, take it at its face value. And then, it's our job to investigate and see, okay, what part of this headline, like, is it accurate?
You know,
ideally, that's what we're doing with our, our podcast episodes. Yeah. Clearly, you have a strong reaction. You're like, I gotta listen now.
I've argued about that online because people get mad that the headline, like sometimes they're mad that the headline made them read the article. And I'm like, well, that's the job of it.
Yeah, it's trying to be like, hey, it's like one of those guys with the signs, that are like,
that headline had nothing to do with this. Those triangular
signs.
Or like, yeah, that article made it sound huge and it wasn't. Like, well, what do you want them to do? School board signed something that might lead to something else. Possibly. Yeah.
I think news articles are going to have to start having trailers, like a movie. Like, you gotta... I'm not clicking on that unless I see the trailer.
That's awesome.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Nathan, though, like, I've known you a little while. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm super old.
Where did you start comedy in Portland? Are you a Portland native?
Yeah, but you can't prove that.
Yeah, we can. We're just going to use the sound bites evidence. Yes, I am.
There's another deep fake. Mm-hmm. Wasn't me. That was the deep state got another black dude with the same shirt. Yeah, I started in Portland. Yeah. We trained him for a decade to grow these daffodils so he can be exactly. Taking 18 Master Gardener courses under duress. I started in Portland, man. And kind of went from there.
Were you a funny
kid? I grew up in Portland, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so. Were you always a little were you a class clown?
Oh.
No?
No. Not at all. I was the shyest kid. Like, there's probably still people from my graduating class that have no idea, because I ain't famous, or wouldn't believe that I was a comic. There's no way. Like, there's people in college that I went to school with that probably wouldn't believe that I'm a comic.
What did you study in college?
Shirts, like puns, a lot of that.
What?
I'm joking.
I was like, did you go to Evergreen? Is that what?
No,
you didn't study anything there.
Hello, Reed College. I majored in rhetoric and media studies. So it's basically, it's a liberal arts way of saying communications.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Okay.
And also American ethnic studies. So I guess kind of this job is right up my alley. Really think about it. I went to school in Salem, grew up in Portland, then came back to Portland because I was broke, and then started comedy, remained broke, and got a little money and got out.
Yeah.
It is.
Wait, are you out of comedy?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, okay. Like what?
I am too comfortable to be a comedian. Nobody will believe anything I have to say. You just look at this life.
I was like, well, everyone's out of comedy right now, but
comedy.
What made you first start doing comedy? What got you, like, what age were you when you
I was in college. I was like a freshman or something like that, or senior. What happened was it was kind of cliche a little bit. I had a fraternity that I was in, and a lot of the members were musicians and stuff. So there was like a college open mic at the popular coffee spot on campus. And we used to always like go back and forth at the lunch table.
At the lunch table, you know, making beats.
like you know, just around the house and stuff like that.
I would love it if you were making beats though with your jokes, but like actually track as if they were beats.
Justification.
So funny. Justification.
Yeah, so they went, we all went to see some other, the fraternity brothers like perform and things like that. And they didn't tell me, but they donated the last 5 minutes of their set to me doing some stand up. And I had never done stand up, like barely even. I'm still like, I just picked rhetoric for my majors. Like, so I wasn't even doing public speaking and stuff like that. And the whole audience, like, you know, turned around. Like one of those old high school movies or something. Everybody turns around at the same time, like you. So I had to go up there and they were like, just do what you did at the table. And I did that and people laughed. And I'm sure you guys know, it's like heroin. Wow. The second you get that first crowd that laughs at you, like, I don't know any of these people. And they think that was, I'm hooked. I got to do this every night. Even if I got to sleep on the streets, that's what I'm doing.
So and your then, fraternity. Yeah, so,
that is not how I felt.
So you're... So your fraternity ruined your life, basically. Yeah,
they tried to ensure that they would always make more money than me.
Oh, which,
I get it.
That's so funny. I like that you said that it was so stereotypical. I'm like, I have what? And then when you said it was like a movie where the face is turned, okay, that part.
Yeah.
Get up there, Nathan. Well, I guess.
Okay. You know what I mean? I was like, but it wasn't like that. I got pulled. I was like, no, I'm not. I can't do it. Because... I'm not that outgoing, crazy, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Well, I wasn't back then, but now, you know, I've done a lot of drugs. I'll do anything now. I'm growing plants indoors. I will do anything. You understand? Breaking Bad's coming back with a black dude in the league. Only it's going to be microgreens instead of meth.
Yeah, right. I think maybe like some sort of blue yeah. or some sort of blue.
He's selling wheatgrass.
He got them sweet potatoes, baby. I'll tell you.
Oh, sweet potatoes.
So did you start going all in on comedy in the Salem then? Or
no. So after I graduated, like I did it maybe a couple other times for like talent shows and things like that. And which I won.
Yeah.
Okay. You hear that, Danny?
Respect that.
I beat you. I moved back up to Portland after I graduated, you know, cause I really deep down, I wanted to be a filmmaker. So that I was trying to figure out, how to do that. And so I decided, of course, move to Portland. That's where you filmmake at, not Los Angeles. And so I gave up on comedy and all that stuff for the most part. Cause I didn't way back then there was not a comedy scene for the most part. In Portland, like Portland, there was one comedy club that had been there for like 25 years or something. And so when anybody thought of comedy in Portland at that time, it was around 2007 or something like that. And every time somebody would say, oh, stand up or comedy or whatever, they would go, oh, this club, that the old club downtown. But other than that, nobody knew. I didn't even know. So I thought, like, there's no real way for me to do it until... I went to that club and they said a couple of the comedians were from Portland. I go, how did you do that? And they gave me a list of open mics. And if they hadn't given me that list of open mics, I never would have really started.
Huh.
You know, and I thought it was done. So they also ruined my life. Now that I think about it.
Every comic's origin story is about all the people that ruin their life step by step.
Every day I look at my bank account, I wonder what could have been.
You could have been a filmmaker in Portland making the big bucks.
I could have been anything.
I could have been shooting Microsoft videos.
No. Could have been a custodian on a production lot and made more money than I'm making with this.
And then you are one of the select few to ever win the Seattle International Comedy Competition, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's got to be over too, right? Huh? Is that still going?
It did last year.
I would doubt this year that they could do that.
I hope. Yeah. I hope they never do it again. Lock in those stats.
Oh, jeez.
We're just going to be like a group of elders later on, like the Seattle International Round Table.
Are you, was that a career? Was that a highlight, would you say? Or what was the biggest? You've won a lot of contests, it feels like.
Yeah, that was pretty great. I got representation.
John Fox is not a listener of the program, so don't worry. Whatever you say,
because you ain't paying him. Hey, dude, you want to come say hi? Come say hi. This is my kid, Rowan. He's really great. Hey, check it out. This is Samantha and Silas, dude.
I like how I turned my head to try to see.
I know, me too. I know, same. Just couldn't help it. That's not
how cameras work, but. Okay.
He always does that. He'll only come right in the frame if he thinks I'm really serious. He's like, I got to mess this up. But if I want him to come in the frame, then he's like, let's, it's an animal. Hey, let's stick his hand in. It's a duck. what was it? Yeah, was a highlight. Yeah.
Were you Portland's funniest? You got that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Portland's funniest.
That one too. A lot of fun.
Were have you had any moment, anything yet that was like that made the biggest change? Was there a big change one that
where you felt like they didn't ruin your life?
Yeah, or it was like, yeah. Oh, this is solidifying me in this.
Well, you know, the Portland one was really cool just because it. Yeah. I got a lot of connection. Well, I guess both of them. So the Portland's funniest was really great because like. A week later, like 2 or 3 weeks later, I was meeting Dave Chappelle. And it was because like they wanted me to open for him in a few of these other couple cities because people saw me in that competition, which, mm-hmm. you know, was really crazy. And, you know, I'm not going to be like, we hang out all the time. He talks, he calls me up on the phone. Yeah. I love, but he taught me he taught me a few things.
That's
you know
cool.
what I mean? And so that, you know, that changed how I saw comedy. It changed up. I mean, it changed how my whole career trajectory for some part. I mean, I'm here. I'm at, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, Walla Walla, you know, and like I feel like a lot of that happened after that, that kind of trajectory, well, kind of focusing.
Now,
good night, Ducky.
My assumption for Walla Walla was your wife got a job there. Is that what?
No, she's actually from here. Okay. So she grew up here. And really the heart of it was wasn't even really the kid. We were just really tired of Portland, both of us.
Really?
Plus, thanks, Jackie. I got him in frame, you see? He's got horns. He can't show his face. He don't want the facial recognition.
He is smart, smart kid.
Yeah. He got 2 A's. His first 2 assignments of school, nice. Of grade school. I'm pretty proud. It's awesome. No, it wasn't. It was because so after I won that Seattle competition, I got representation. And so I was spending time going pretty much like going back and forth from Portland to L.A., right. And then as it got more frequent, like my wife doesn't like Portland either. So she was like, you're not even here. And I'm here. And right. We got the kid and everything like that. And I don't want to be here. I want to be closer to my family. And I was like, I don't want to be here either. So we moved, yeah. man. And we moved out here. And we're closer to all of her family, and I eventually moved most of my family here. So,
oh, wow.
like, we're all surrounded and stuff like that, which is great. Now, yeah. you know, our kids starting school and everything like that. I'm going to move. I got to grab plug my phone in. So I'm going to be moving around. Is that okay?
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
I'm still we're curious what Dave Chappelle said that you said changed the trajectory.
Well, I don't know.
If it's that a was secret. Private. You can't tell us, huh?
Yeah. It's not, yeah.
Probably.
It's I'm not going to. And then he invited me back and he had this crystal ball.
Yeah. You know, I always knew he had that crystal ball.
No, I think. He has a good way of like getting people to put things in perspective.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And this business is not, I mean, yeah, he didn't, yeah, it was just kind of like, know what you value. You know what I mean? And that was the catalyst to kind of where I am and what I actually needed in life. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and
right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go on. Say mm-hmm. another thing. But yeah, so that's pretty much it. It was like, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about what it means to be an artist. After watching a lot of that too. And how do I say it?
I feel like he let you in the Illuminati or something.
Yeah, I also feel like I also feel like you could tell us the rest once we stop recording. I thought because I had a sense it was going to be something about like some lesson about what really matters and not, you know, going down the deep end.
Like, the hell out.
Right. Save yourself.
No, it's not. Yeah,
something. You know.
Yeah, it's very boring. I mean.
I'm such a big Dave Chappelle fan that you could seriously tell me a 5-minute story about how he brushed his teeth. And I'd be like, oh, fascinating. He showed you that. And then you floss which way? Right to left or left to right? Okay.
Secret.
Okay. I'm maybe not that big of a fan, but I'm just saying, you know.
Eat some chocolate chip cookie dough every day.
Right.
I think a good way to think about it is like, so, I mean, all of us are performers. All of us are artists and stuff. And we have people, significant others in our lives, man. Entertainment is a crazy, crazy thing.
It's a hell of a drug.
Professionally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And people love to exploit the fact that you're strung out. Do you know what I mean? And then your family didn't pick that career. You picked that career.
Yeah.
Right. So then you have to weigh that. Sometimes. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
The point where like, you say people exploit that you're what part, how did you mean that? When you said they exploit that you're strung out? Like they, yeah. Oh, they exploit like, that like that part I didn't quite understand.
So I mean even on the micro level, like comedy clubs, do you know what I mean? Like, I've had great relationships with comedy clubs over the years and stuff, but the basic principle, the idea, the system of those comedy clubs is like they're a package, right? They package comedy. They're not the generators of the comedy. And for the longest time, especially before comedy started, you know, having another upswing, like in 2006 and things like that, comedy clubs, at least the ones who ran them, like the non-chain ones and stuff, mm-hmm. but really all of them, is they exploit the fact that comedians will do comedy for free, for nothing, for less than nothing. They'll risk crazy stuff that the normal person wouldn't risk to be able to do it. And they notice that businesses that are involved in comedy, they know that. And they exploit that. I don't know if it's 100%, you know, on purpose or not. But I mean, like a glaring example, there was a comedy club down south that told me flat out, I hire my friends. And if you want to get on the roster, first of all, you have to knock them off the list, the roster. You have to come down here and work for free to open. And you have to do so much better than that headliner that I knocked him off. And, you know, it seems like, that's just the sport. That's the game and things like that. But I mean,
when you put in perspective, like when you're bringing other people along with it, like, I mean, when I was a single comic, I did everything. Like how many nights I slept in a car, slept in truck stops, slept in rest areas and worse. But like when you have another, like people who are tied to you, do you know what I mean? Like aren't in a relationship and they didn't choose that. That's rough. Right. And then even with that, you know, comedy club managers and owners all across the country were exploiting that. Like that person I was supposed to try and knock off the roster probably had just as many kids as I did, probably had more kids than I, probably was in a worse position, had less opportunities than I did. Right. Like you're just trying to get a paycheck, but they know that. And, on average, the average pay to comics has not changed for a long time, especially since I got in. And people were saying like it's been the same since like the 90s, roughly, like what you get paid on average, like to feature or to host and things like that. So the pay hasn't changed, but the price, the standard, the cost of living's gone up. What those clubs and things charge for tickets and everything else has gone up. So then where does that money go? But at the same time, all of us have to feel like we're being pitted against each other. So, I mean, even when it's not a straight up like entity, like a comedy club or something like that, just seeing somebody from your orbit get on like TV or certain awards and things like that. Do you know what I mean? Like you. So when I first started in Portland, like nobody really had been on TV, like TV. And then close to like 2008, 2009, I think like a lot more people from Portland started getting opportunities and comedy got more popular. So a lot more of us ended up getting taken down or like asked to come down to LA or New York or, you know, those things where the heavy hitters are, where all the representation is. Well, that, all that stuff, what it does to the masses in all of those scenes, right? Everyone's not going to get on something or get asked to go somewhere, but you see that happen. You see that example. And before long, especially in that scene, that's thought as the trajectory. If you're not on that track, then what point is any of this? Do you know what I mean? So then it focuses your, you know, your creativity, you could say. I don't know how true that is, but I do know it definitely makes you a little bit more desperate. It makes you not value yourself as an artist. You say, what do I got to do? What do I got to sacrifice to get on this track? Because I know that's the only meaningful, real track. I mean, people will tell you, everyone's in their own lane. It's like, well, okay, but shit, I want to be on Trevor Noah's show, you know?
Right.
And so what I'm saying with that is, people will do, like, there's a lot of shady, representation, out there, managers, agents, record label owners and stuff. I was super lucky to be a part of like an amazing record label, but there was a lot of predatory ones out there that, literally take your content and sell it back to you. Do you know what I mean?
What?
Like they make you work it, they make you create it, and then they sell it back to you so that you can sell it and make some money for yourself after they've made their cut. Do you know what I mean? Like that's the stuff that I'm talking about. Like that and life.
You know, I don't disagree with anything you said. But what I wonder is like, is it just a
good,
nature?
I'm about to turn this off. If you would have said,
is it?
That's right. You don't need to take that.
I'm drunk. So
I hear this talk though that I hear, I've heard other comics say this too. But I didn't start off in comedy. I started off from theater, and now I work and I do some stuff in film, and. Like, I feel like that's the arts. I don't know, like, other than piano players, I don't know if there's any artists that don't get exploited in that definition. Because there's
I think it's easy.
Half of it is that I think there's so many people that are willing to do it as a hobby. that they're not, they don't care about the money because it's an art. It's therapeutic. There's a lot of reasons people want to do it. So the demand is always going to be higher than the available slots, which doesn't, which hurts you, which hurts the people that want to do it professionally.
Well, and there's the other thing about it too, though, is we have to practice to get good at it. We have to practice. And in order to practice, we need an audience. Like, I don't think it's I don't necessarily, you know, like Silas's example of a piano player. Like, I don't think that's the same sort of
piano loop. Players are the only freaking people you can't get ever to work for free.
Well,
they know their value. And they know there's not a bunch of people and one that can they're like, no, I need
baby grand joke. Did you get that?
They'll be like, I need $200.
Oh no, I didn't hear you. I didn't hear your baby grand joke.
Oh, okay.
No, because I was like, they got kids, but grand. Uh-huh.
I'm so sorry. Oh no, I get it now. I just didn't hear you. But yeah, I hear what you're saying.
I've produced and directed musicals where the only person getting paid in there was the piano player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because that was the one position we could not get anyone to do for free. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's hard. All artists, I feel like we are told like that your whatever it is only means something if it's this and this. And then there ends up being gatekeepers to this and this. And they get to drive your motivations, for the most part. You know what I mean? Like, we've all heard of the starving artist, right? Mm-hmm. But everybody knows for that artist to really, really, really has to have some sort of representation that's going to get them in the doors of this and that. But you never hear about the starving agent or the starving manager or the starving producer, right?
Yeah.
They start out and they already make their this and that. And a great comic told me one time, we're the faucets, they're the cups. We're the faucets. Even if they make that cup look really nice and they put ice in it and they give it to the customer or whatever, they're still just the cup. What's in that cup, the comedy, the creation, the art, comes from us performers. Mm-hmm. But no one really has respect for the faucet. It's really just how nice the cup is. And it would take artists to start valuing themselves more, but then you look at the atmosphere that is in it. Like, the atmosphere of comedy scenes is not conducive to making you feel like
you have to
everything you do is worth it.
You have
it
makes to be you feel okay like, not working as much by like having your value. And going well, that's fine. I don't need this. You know, in business, they always teach you to pay yourself first. Like, you always got to cut a check for yourself first, because if you're not around, if the business doesn't exist, you won't be there to pay your employees. So, and there's also the idea of if when you're on a plane and the oxygen masks come down, you have to put it on yourself before you put it on the child, right? So that's, and maybe this could be bad of me. It's why I don't begrudge producers that make sure they get paid for each one, because I know they're not going to do it. If they're not getting money, they're not going to do it, because there's no thrill in that. Like, there's no fun in that. I don't mind that. Yes, I would like, if they tell me that I'm getting paid, I damn well better get paid. Like, you can't tell me it's $50 and then say, well, sorry, not if you have people showed up. Like, well, that wasn't the deal. You told me you got to pay me. And I appreciate the producers that will take that risk, that are willing to, like, I will pay everybody. And that's in all things, not just comedy. But
I think the thing I like, so it's not so much like getting paid, like, of course, yeah. Take your cut and things. The problem is, I think when those producers or whatever end up taking a bigger cut and then making the performers fight over the scraps of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that. And then like kind of ensuring that they go after each other. So I don't have to like expend most of my, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
like a comedy club owner, they'll water down the drinks, still make people pay full price, and, you know, make people, they'll pile a ton of comics on the show so they don't have to pay that much. They make them, you know, figure out like, oh yeah, I got $10 for that. Like stuff like that, man. Like that's the, it's, it permeates through this whole scene, comedy scene as a whole, and especially like in all art forms, I think, you know what I mean? Cause we're all, like art in some, especially in our society, art is kind of pushed to the side. Do you know what I mean? James Baldwin always was like, you know, it's a terrible day when a country stops producing artists, but like, I don't think we really value artists like that. We value mm-hmm. celebrities. Mm-hmm. We value the artists that have been put on, you know, packaged really well. Mm-hmm. Not to say that like they're not worthy of that packaging thing. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying like they put them up there, not for them, but for everyone else down there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no, I get you. If you want this, then you got to do what I say. You got to come this way. I got to like you. I got to think I can make money off you. My manager, that was the first thing he's told me. He was like, anybody in this business, when they look at you to represent you, they don't care if they like you. They don't care if you're popular. They say, can I make money off of this person? And if the answer is no, then what's the point of going further on down the line? I believe in this one. They'll never. That's my soundbite. Representation will never believe in you.
But you know what? I know, not just to be contrary to the, because I do agree. There's a very, very, very hideously ugly side to the business. But the thing is, that one that believes in you, they still see money coming. Do you know what I'm saying? True. If they believe in you, they believe that you are going to be making money. I don't think anybody is going to say, hey, join my business and join my roster as a free ride. I don't think you're ever going to get paid. And I'm all right with that because I believe in you. And I believe you're never going to work and never going to make money. They see the money coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. You know? Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah. Totally. I think like,
but yeah, I mean, they but a lot of times like, it's the ones that are
believing you. They don't mean that. They, yeah.
It's also like, it's kind of far and few between the ones that are like, I believe in you and I will wait for the money.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
They're like, if you don't put out on the first date, it's over.
Yeah.
There's
and
no
you
love.
Know, and that, I guess like it's a long winded way to say it, but like, and that is why it's so tough. Like that's the arena we're mm-hmm. in. And if you're by yourself, so be it. It's a gladiator kind of sport in that sense, because that's just how it is for us. Mm-hmm. Like one comic or, you know, a group of comics aren't going to change that. Right. There's always somebody willing to do it for less. So you just got to get in there and get your shots at. But the hard part is like, you imagine you're in the gladiator scene and then you got your family behind you tied to your back or something like that. Like, well, you never do that. Like, I mean, I get it. But what I would say, someone told me to name your price too. And that's the thing, we're creatives. So like, it's a hard thing to say, like, I'm going to step back because I got these other people I'm responsible for. And I think a lot of, especially artists, assume that that means you just give up on everything and let it go. Well, I mean, your creativity, what you did in your art is what tied you to that in the first place. And obviously that's not the only arena to achieve what you want to get. That's just the fastest track. But I mean, if you want to, it would be incredibly inhumane to drag somebody into comedy that doesn't want to be in comedy or never expected to be in comedy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. This got real dark.
It didn't get dark. I mean, I think that ultimately what it boils down to in everybody's life, and especially I think we have to work harder at it as artists, is being very clear about what our boundaries are, what our price is for what we value, whether or not that's just saying like, hey, I'm not going to do this show or this if I don't make X amount of money, but also like, what's the price on us and our families and our relationships and our comfort and our this and that. Like, what is that price that we're not willing to pay? And also, what is the price that we damn well shouldn't pay? I mean, let's be real. You know, and I think that changes as we get older too. And it changes as we get also wiser. And because, you know, just kind of going back, it's not like I'm saying like, I agree with the business and I agree with this and that, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it would be great if that was all upfront. And there's a lot of stuff that people, they're all shiny eyed and like all happy and this, that, that, and you don't realize it until later what's actually going on. And that's not cool.
Yeah. And also I think like, you got into this, you get into art and things like that because you want to live your life on your own terms. And you would hope that like throughout your life, throughout your career, that you can still continue to do that. No matter what you choose as far as your life path. I mean, the whole thing has been on your own terms. I think a lot of us forget that we started with nothing. You know what I mean? We started with a pencil. Like I sound like a rapper. Started with a pen and a pad. And
that's right. Do those beats and make those jokes.
I had iMovie, nothing else in a park. But yeah, still, I mean, like that, we get into this mindset of like, if you don't get this and this and this, then all that, really, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? I mean, you see a lot of headlines. I saw a lot of headliners when I was coming up, like, they were just completely going through the motions. You know what I mean? They didn't show me what to be. They showed me what not to be.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's because you get into those things and then it's not even what you thought anymore. And then you think about what you gave up to get to that point. And you don't realize that a lot of that you put into a lottery. You gave up so much stuff. It's like going to a pawn shop. Right. And like normally you could buy your stuff back. But with this, you pawn your stuff and maybe you'll get it back. Maybe if you come and pawn a little more later on, it's like this is your life. This is your whole life. And a lot of comics and artists deep down, I know like you don't value your life. Do you know what I mean? Like that you're willing to do anything like to, especially to get the art across. But then once you realize that there's people that are succeeding, benefiting, making tons of money off of you not caring about your life, man, no. I'll do this. The day I started this was on my own terms. And today is the same thing. Am I rich? Do I have a pool? Nah. You know? Does Conan know who I am? Does, you know, Trevor Noah ever call me on the phone? No.
But after this episode, they are fans. You know, hi, boys. Hi.
You did give me a revelation during there. I think whenever I've done these shows in these towns, like, I don't want to, these very small podunk towns that you get taken to with a road dog, you know, who's act has not changed much. When I do,
why those, are you talking about me like that?
When
you
could just
whenever Samantha takes me,
when I do those shows, I get the same.
I was like, yo, you talking about my city, man? You can't just say that. No, I'm joking.
When I'm sitting there waiting for my set, I get the same feeling as when I'm sometimes when I'm waiting to teach a children's theater class. Like, this isn't why I signed up to do it. But it seems to be the only way I'm making money.
Yes.
And I never feel like that good. I might feel good while I'm doing it though. I'm like, okay, I like it now that I'm here. But it's not what I imagined. I never imagined teaching children's theater.
When I was new in comedy, like there was tons of those road gigs where it was horrible all the way around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you carry a knife on stage like crazy stuff. And you would tell yourself, I'm doing this for the experience
the
so I can get sharper. So sharper. I can take, yeah. I'm doing this so people will laugh at me when I kill this dude for helping with me. I need to feel that rush. Like that stuff, like you always found the benefit in it. Do you know what I mean? But I mean, when it gets to a point like today, where like there's comedy shows all over the place, there's comedy specials, so many different whatever this and that to get on TV. Plus, everyone expects you to get on TV now. So every time you see them, they're asking you why you're not on TV, why you're not on this, and you're on that. Now you do that show, you don't care about the experience. You say, and not to say like you should care about it, you should do it. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that like everything you do that's not on that track is considered hopeless. Do you know what I mean? So if you find yourself in that town, you figure, oh, my career is over because I'm here and I'm not this and that. And that's stupid. Like there's people behind that. There's systems behind that. I mean, and you know, if you're going to put your life on the line like that, you got to be smarter about like, this is your business. Nobody starts a business to be in middle management in that business. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And this applied in my head. So hopefully it makes sense to you guys. It's the capitalist society we live in. And that is how it seeps into the art and affects artists who are often not of that same mindset, right? We're not necessarily like playing in that system, but we're in that system's rules. And so hearing this is also like a reminder, like those are other people's problems. You know what I mean? People being like, you're not a real artist if you're not on TV, if you didn't follow that track, if you didn't do this, if you do that, what, you just want to get on stage and tell some jokes because you love it? What the hell's wrong with you? No, not what's wrong with us. I mean, and there's all of this navigating in like, what is the system that we're in? Do we want to be in that system? Is it working for us? Is it not working for us? Are we happy? Are we unhappy? What's changed in our life? And just like try to clear out all that bullshit and just be like you're saying, like, this is the life that I value. This is the life that I choose. You know what? I look in your eyes, Nathan, I look in your eyes. You got that shine behind it. Do you know what I mean? What does any of it mean? What does any of it mean if you have everything, 10 pools, 10 this, 10 that, and you're just got these dead eyes? I mean, some people, they have it all and their eyes are still glowing, but hey, good for them. You know, it's like, we don't have to.
I mean, especially now when you can really take it to the people more than you ever could. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what a lot of representation starts looking at, is they look at what kind of fan base you already have so they can do less work I'm not trying to say representation like agents and managers are lazy. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying there's very shady ones. There's sharks out there like any other business. And us as artists try to act like there's no sharks out there. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't swim in anywhere. That's not the case at all. And I don't know.
Guys, yeah. We're butting up here on time.
Sorry, I'm just babbling.
It's all right. Hey, before we go though, when everyone comes on the show the first time, we have 7 questions we want to ask them and get your answers to. So this is the world famous 7 questions. Special effect. Okay. Number one.
Can't steal beatbox.
What are you most nerdy about?
I don't know. Plants, man. That's actually, it's plants, then astronomy are my big ones. But
do you have a favorite plant?
Favorite planet?
Plant. Plant.
But both, you double nerd. Yes. What is
favorite plant? It's called the Jimpy Jimpy. It's a tree, or I think it might be a bush. Anyway, I think it is so poisonous, like it kills you. So like the sensation, you can just brush up against it. The wind can blow, and you're near it, and the sensation they say is like getting stabbed with a nail that's been blowtorched, that's hot, but like it's incredibly poisonous. I think it's in Australia or something, but you can grow it if you want. You have to handle it like with full PPE, and you have to have it closed off because every part of this plant, it is poisonous, is deadly. Like, so, or if not deadly, then extremely excruciatingly painful. It's so painful that people who have been affected by it have been known to kill themselves or try to kill themselves to alleviate the pain. It's called the Jimpy Jimpy plant. It's like G-I-M-P-Y.
Why does it have such an adorable name for being
so? Yeah, right. That's the thing. And it looks like unassuming. It's not like a bunch of thorns or anything like that. It's like, but it think of like stinging nettles mixed with like something from Chernobyl or something like that.
Jeez.
It's my favorite. I want one so bad. If I was super rich, like if I actually made it on TV, that's what my hedge is. Like, that's what my, I wouldn't put up a fence. It would just be those. Cause like, I mean, how are you going to get through those? You know what I mean? Even the roots will make you want to like, will be excruciatingly painful. There's no part of the plant that's okay to touch or smell or it's great. I shouldn't say that. I sound terrible though.
Okay. Hold on. Number two, what's something that you love to eat?
I've always loved enchiladas. My mom's from Texas, so like, of course, that's what I always started on. She's from Southern Texas too, so like, enchiladas are the things. It's not like that restaurant enchiladas. She makes the real stuff. Like, you get mad. Like, I almost got arrested at a Taco Bell once because I ordered something and it was not. Never mind.
It's called an enchilada.
You threw some Jimpy Jimpy at them or Jumpy Jumpy, whatever.
I ground it into a powder. I could do that. Never mind. Don't let this go out. I can't have. I might run for president one day. They're like, he wanted to kill a bush.
What's something that you love to drink?
Man. Water. Let's just say water. Yeah, I have to say water. As a black dude, I'm obligated to say water in 2020.
But what kind
black
of
lives
water?
Matter.
Do you have a favorite sparkling, bottled, boiled?
No, not really. The sparkling stuff, my wife likes them, but I'm I do like lemon in the water sometimes. Or like, yeah, things like that. Lemon or cucumber or something. Dang.
Okay.
You ever have some cucumber water, cuz? Huh?
Cuz, don't even get me started.
What kind of music do you love?
That's a hard one because, you know, they're artists. So I always try to like think of them the same as like when I like to listen to comedy, like the same any music that has some sort of a narrative to it or like some sort of hidden thing that you're expected to read between the lines. Do you know what I mean? Not just like simple metaphors, but my favorite artist right now, he's gotten me through all of 2020 is Moses Sumney. He sings like a bird man and has just so he's like a black Bjork a little bit. It's pretty cool. And he has like some songs that like, if you listen to him, like I listen to him on drives, like if I had to go to shows. And the more you listen to him, you see what he's trying to say, what's in between the lines with that. And I love that stuff. That's what I try to do in my comedy. Like my last comedy album, not a single track was about what I was talking about in the track. Which I wish people would listen to it, especially right now, because it's talking about all this right here. It's called Because. Look at me plugging myself.
Okay.
Yeah, seriously, do it.
Yeah. It's on Kill Rock Stars.
What do you love to create?
Hope. And that sounds super cliche, I know. But especially like right now. So in comedy, one of my jokes I was most proud of was my first album. I talked about my sister having Tourette's, and then I was able to make it sound like she had like a superpower at the end of the joke. And I always thought that was really, really cool. that I could do that with just words or jokes and things like that. And, you know, other people with Tourette's heard that joke too, I'm sure, and kind of made them whatever. And I think a lot of that kind of permeates through all my stuff, even with the gardening stuff. Hope in the sense of like people are, especially in the next few months, are going to be food insecure. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Food bags, all that good stuff. You don't know where your next meal's coming from, or you got all these bills and then you lost your job or whatever. If you can take one of those pressing obligations out, that empowers you. It makes you feel like you have some sort of control. And so a lot of the growing stuff, showing how easy it is to demystify it. So people who are really struggling need to eat and things like that are at the mercy of like businesses that show up in their neighborhood and try to gouge them for everything. They're not at the mercy of that anymore because they can do their own stuff. Yeah. So hope, okay. I would say. That was long. Sorry.
No, it's great.
Don't apologize for hope.
I guess. This year is probably the only one I should probably apologize. Like, I'm sorry I even got your hopes up like that. This is a terrible year. We should not, none of us should be happy.
Okay. What's a game you love to play?
Like a board game or like actual?
However.
No game?
However you want to take it.
I don't play no games, man. Nothing. I deal with my plants. I like to play whether or not I can bring them back. Like, is it too far gone or not? So I give it a shot sometimes. That's a good one. That and Minkala, I think it is. The African game. The little beans. You go, never mind.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I
used to play that all the time.
Right? Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, it's fun.
You have to teach me.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Constantly saying in that biography that nobody would be around in 100 years to read it, so that they're all like, he tried to say it, he was wrong, and then they... Yeah, I don't know. That he made the most of the time that he had, I think. That they could see something in their lives that I affected in some way. You know what I mean? Whatever that is, if somebody learns how to tell a dick joke or something like that, and then they end up, a great grandkid ends up being a presidential candidate, and then it's like a man told me one time a three something walks into a bar or something. It's like, that would be pretty cool, I guess.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Then they could debate the joke structure.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like a science. Then it's like, oh man. Are you into comediology?
Comediology? It's got to be one. Yeah. Nathan Brandon, thank you for coming on. Really appreciate it. Where can we follow you? What's the best ways to follow you?
All my comedy is just Nathan Brandon stuff. NathanBrandon.com is my comedy thing. My growing stuff is all pretty much Dig It With Nate. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm Nathan from Dig It With Nate, you dig. And, you know, bringing that back. It's on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I have a YouTube page, especially now is where I put the videos up. I'm doing a series right now, which I'm hoping people will join me, showing people how to grow stuff, even if you don't have a yard or a balcony. If all you have is a window space, because that's how I grew up. We didn't have a yard or anything. You can still grow stuff for your family and grow stuff to take the pressure off of food expenses and things like that. And I grow it in the worst conditions so that people can see that it's totally possible. I don't pay for anything.
Oh, sweet.
So yeah, that's on YouTube. My YouTube channel is Dig It with Nathan Brannon, and that's all that. So check it out. Tell your friends.
Absolutely.
Especially if you're in the city.
Well, that's it. This is a show.
Yay!
Thank you for listening.
Yay! I am drunk. I should not have said that.
You're drunk off of all your delicious water. You got some spiked lemons.
That's it. You drink enough of it. Plus, I jogged around the block and all this smoke, so I am gone.
Toasty.